Hello, my name is Amy Toy, the host of Angel Answers with Amy Toy. Besides being a radio show host, I'm also an intuitive counselor who provides spiritual insight into matters of the heart. Are you confused about your love life? Thinking of getting a new job? Wondering about your purpose and why you are here? I work very closely with not only the angelic realm, but also those who have crossed over to the other side. All sessions are strictly confidential. I also offer long-distance healing sessions using angelic energy. This angelic energy, also known as integrated energy therapy, IET, can be done through Skype or on the phone and helps you get the issues out of the tissues. For first-time clients only, I am offering a 20% discount. You can find me online on amytoyamytoy.com, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or email me at angelicamy35@gmail.com or simply call 727-514-7323. May the angels carry you through, and this is for entertainment purposes only. And welcome to Angel Answers with Amy Toy. I'm your host, Amy Toy. Thank you for bearing with us with some technical difficulties. Today we have Micaiah Hart, and she's an award-winning author, a change maker, a mentor, and an adventurer in many realms. She grew up in Scotland and settled in the boonies of Northern California before moving to Hawaii, where she now lives. She has studied the nature of reality since she was very young, seeking answers in many places before she found her present teachers, who are a large group of disembodied beings that speak through Diana John. All Micaiah's writing and teaching are about empowering people to operate from a place of trust instead of fear, so that we can allow light to flow through us. Her authenticity and radical wisdom enable her to offer invaluable assistance to everyone who is participating in the remarkable awakening that is occurring right now on this planet. Welcome. How are you tonight, Micaiah?
I'm pretty good. What about you?
I'm good. I'm in Florida, so yeah, it's a nice good night.
You're in Florida. I'm in Hawaii. I'm in the middle of a volcanic eruption, actually. But every day is a good day. Every day my house is still here and I'm still here is a good day.
So are you on the Big Island where the volcanic eruptions are happening? Or I know Hawaii
yes.
is...
Yes, oh, I'm gosh, right gosh. I'm in Leilani Estates, which is where it all started. Yeah. So it's very intense times. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Well, God bless you for coming on tonight. Thank you for thank you for coming on, and now let's bring some vibrational healing to maybe the volcanic eruptions and maybe we can.
Well, yes, and thank you very much for having me on. I greatly appreciate it. And yes, let's send lots of loving support to everybody who's dealing with, these earth changes.
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I find in your introduction, I wanted to bring this up to you, help participating in the remarkable awakening that is occurring right now on this planet. And what do you feel that awakening is, in your opinion, for our listeners out there?
Yeah, that's really a very good question. I mean, we hear a lot about awakening and how wonderful it is and how wonderful it's going to be and everything like that. And I wouldn't argue with that, but I do think, and I think it's important to say this really clearly, it is a difficult process to be going through when you're, at least when you're on the cutting edge of it, because you become, how it's been actually described to me is that the soul that we are. Okay, well, I'll speak for myself here, but I'm speaking for everybody else too. The soul that I am is an incredibly powerful being of light. And the body, this body that the soul has manifested, cannot contain all of the soul. It would simply explode. What is actually happening in the process of what has been called awakening, it's also called ascension, a few other things, is that more of the soul is becoming present in the body. And what that means is a very heightened awareness, heightened sensitivity. And I've actually led a couple of workshops on the process of awakening. And I've found that it really helps people who are going through this to talk to other people who are going through the same thing, because we kind of think we're going a little crazy, you know?
Yes.
I think you probably know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yes. And
yes.
Yeah, it seems like every year around December, January, into my birth month of March sometimes, I am going through something like that, like I was exhausted. I think December, January, February, March, and I just came awake last month because I was sleeping all the time. And, and I was looking, I know there's a symptoms of ascension, and I'm looking that up, and it talks about, you know, sleeping a lot and getting rest and just feeling like you're having the flu when you don't have the flu. And that's what I was experiencing, and I'm like, I go through this every damn year. I'm like, really? But not for four months.
Well, you know, for some of us, it has been going on a long time. And I will say that it is really important to get a lot of rest, because I think it, in scientific terms, you can talk about it as the electromagnetic grid of that we are, that the body is, that that the self is, that is changing. And as it shifts and changes, we need a lot of rest. We, in fact, we need often to be asleep to allow the shifts and changes to happen. So we have to let it be what it is. But
I know.
It's not an easy process. No, I mean,
no, it's not. Yeah. And fluids, lots of fluids, just taking care of yourself. I mean, there's a website called AscensionSymptoms.com, and it talks about all these flu-like symptoms, and I'm like, okay, you know, and it just hit me. I'm like, yeah, I felt like that in December, and so I thought I'd ask you about that, and I just learned something. I had an aha moment, because I thought I was going nuts, and my friends were like, no, you're just changing, your abilities are growing and heightening. Great, another growth expansion. I'm like, really? Yeah. I say to my spirit guides and angels, really, guys? So.
Yes, and we just need to allow the process to take its time. We're experiencing growing pains, if you like. But, you know, the important thing is not to do what we would have done maybe 20 or 30 years ago and rush to a doctor to get it all fixed, because it's a process that's got to be allowed to happen. Without interference, usually, is the best way of letting it happen. You know, don't interfere too much. Let it be. Trust that all is well. That's not easy to do, but
no, and I mean, I don't like doctors anyway. I go to my healer, my naturopath, my acupuncturist. That's the three people I go to.
Because, me too.
Doctors,
Western medicine is not. It doesn't even work well nowadays. I mean, that's not fair. It does work for some people and it works for some things, but it certainly doesn't work helping with the symptoms of ascension.
No, if you went to the doctor, your MD, they'd be like, "Oh, we're going to send you to a PhD, a psychiatrist, or a psychologist, a head shrinker, to make sure you're okay." So, Nakaya, let me talk about your path. How did you begin this work?
I was, when I look back, I'm 65 now, and when I look back at my life, it's very clear to me that I chose to be born into this incarnation to assist in the changes that the planet is going through. But all I knew when I was growing up is that I didn't fit in with everybody else. So I spent a lot of time alone in nature. I mean, I feel very, very much at ease in nature, much more at ease in nature than I do with groups of people, actually. And I've experienced tremendous love and support from nature. But, you know, I still, for many years, felt like just the odd one out in groups of people. And it really, I have had a series of amazing epiphanies in my life. I feel incredibly fortunate, actually, for the support that I've received from unseen realms. I feel incredibly fortunate, and I feel like that's what's helped me to survive this crazy world we live in. So it became very clear to me at one point that I couldn't, I needed to claim my path, my chosen path, and step out in the world as a helper, a teacher, a mentor. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, my name, Micaiah, that was given to me in a cave in Montana. It's kind of a long story, but I didn't at first realize that it was my name. And then I was just getting to know my teachers at that time. And I asked them about the name, and they said to me, I remember it well, they laughed, and they said to me, "Oh, it's your name. You didn't know that, did you?" And they laughed. And and they said it means mentor. And so, I need to claim that fully and walk that path and shine my shining and stop trying to run away and hide.
Yes.
So
we all want to do that. I mean, I can relate to that. I mean, yes. I wanted to always run from it. And then it took me 3 near-death experiences to kind of wake up, the third one being the most, monumental, but I can relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had a few of those near-death experiences too, some of us cannot escape our destinies.
No.
Even though, I teach other people that you always have a choice, but in this situation, I feel like I would be a fool to try and do anything but follow my path. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny. I do actually. We have a great astrologer that comes on the show periodically, Tish Aiken. But I had another astrologer before her. And when I went to my astrologer friend and I said, look up this date. So I think it was September 17th, 2000. And she looked at my chart and looked at it. She goes, "A huge spiritual awakening was supposed to happen to you." I'm like, "Well, yeah."
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
To me, that's destiny. It's written
yes,
in the stars.
That's exactly what I mean. I mean, we're, it's like we're not alone. We're being guided by, limitless numbers of light beings of different kinds who are infinitely wiser than we are. And that's an incredible gift to know that. I'm really, really grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yes, me too.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Now, you say that you have been studying the nature of reality. Tell us a little bit more about that, and what do you mean by that? I mean, when you said about going into nature, and they're saying the reality of nature, that's what my guides were calling it.
Ah, the reality of nature. Well, let me say, first of all, I because of the kind of work I do, I have to use the word spirituality, and I don't like that word because it makes some people run a mile and it makes other people lose any common sense that they ever had. And it disempowers other people. So, and what I really do, I mean, I'm a very practical person. I'm a mechanic. I'm a builder. I just built my own house here in Hawaii. I've fixed my own car for years and years. I love being out in nature and just camping out and being on my own. I'm a very down-to-earth person. And, when we chose to incarnate in this body at this time, it's because we wanted to be here on this planet. And it's a planet where you do practical things and you live in a physical reality. And we wanted to experience that. And a lot of people actually try to escape it because they think it's lowly. I mean, a lot of religions teach that. And it isn't a lowly path at all. It's actually, if you've chosen to be human, it's the path you've chosen. And it's a very, if you want to use the word lowly, you've got to use the word high. I mean, it's a very big, huge, brave path to choose. I mean, it's not easy being human. You have to be brave to, you have to be courageous to be fully human and experience this life fully. And that is actually what we wanted when we first came here. You know, when we first chose to come here. So, you know, I very much, what I feel like I teach is I teach about the true nature of reality, because we've been told untold lies. I mean, incredible numbers of lies about, you know, about all kinds of things, you know, that we have to work hard in order to earn money, that we have to be good people, that we have to help others. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with helping others or being a good person, but it isn't always. That is not the primary reason why we came here. And some of us, for some of us, that actually didn't figure in. We came here for very specific reasons that were not to do with being a so-called good person or helping others. And, you know, the emphasis on that we have in this cult, in lots of cultures, about helping others is, it's often not useful, because we have to, first of all, primarily and always take care of ourselves. You know, and from that place of balance, then we step out and take care of others. But if you try to help others to your own detriment, or you try to help others when you're not really getting joy from doing so, then in the end, you'll have to, someone will have to take care of you. You'll be the one who has to be taken care of. So let's break that cycle, you know.
Definitely. And one of the epiphanies I had recently, too, was I was helping someone I loved very much, but they didn't want my help. So my lesson was to back off and take care more of myself. And the more I channeled energy into myself and self-care, the more relaxed I was, the more content I was, the more I could help others that wanted and needed my help.
Yes, exactly. And really, I mean, it's one of the hardest lessons I've had, that I frequently cannot help other people. They either don't want my help, or they're not interested in the kind of help I'm offering. And so it often feels like kind of an accident, a wonderful accident, but an accident when I do help others. You know, it's people, and sometimes when you help others, you're disempowering them. So, you know.
And sometimes the greatest gift you can give these individuals, especially the one I'm speaking of, is to allow them to walk their own path.
Exactly. Even though it might be agonizing to watch, and it sometimes is.
It was agonizing for me to be in this person's life, so I've had to sever all ties. And that was what I needed to do. And, you know, the wonderful thing about intuition is, which I feel is God, universe, creative mind, whatever, talking to you. And I had a moment where I was supposed to meet up with this person, and I got the gut feeling not to do it. And it was like an aha moment. And I was like, I'm not supposed to go there anymore. It's interesting how that works. I mean, so, you know, people feel guilty, and I felt guilty. But you know what? The greatest gift is to help yourself first. And I'll tell you, I'm happy as a clam. I really am. It's so much better. And we have to take care of ourselves before we take care of others.
Right. And I think the greatest gift that anyone can give to the world is to be absolutely fully who they are, and live in, you know, find what brings them joy and live that joy, because that joy from just living fully and doing what brings you to a place of joy, that is infectious, and it really helps people. I mean, you know, I'm a kite surfer. You know what kite surfing is?
Yes, I do. Yeah, yeah. But explain to our listeners what that is who don't know.
Well, it's a little like windsurfing, which you've probably all seen, but you have a kite way up in the air above you, and so you zip across the water with this on a small board with this kite way up in the air above you, and you can jump and do tricks and things. And I took up kite surfing in around 2004, specifically because I wanted to find out who I was when I was doing something that was useless, something that did not help other people, because I'd been such a good fixer all my life. You know, I'd been fixing mm-hmm. everyone all my life.
Yeah.
And I wanted that to stop being part of my identity. It felt like that was an egoic thing. It wasn't really an expression of me. So I took up kitesurfing. And the funny thing is that I feel like kitesurfing probably helps the world more than anything else I've ever done, because it brings me to such a place of joy. You know, and that joy is infectious. So
it is. You know. It is. It really is. Yeah. Do something you love. I mean, I love to dance. I used to love to do Zumba, but I kind of went past that because it got boring. But I want to get back into golf, man. I enjoy that. I would golf. Yeah. I love walking, and I love doing that stuff. So.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So. Well, really, it's whatever turns you on. Do it. Do
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Enjoy your life. And
yes.
I mean, what is the new paradigm, and how do you see it changing our daily lives? So what is that new paradigm? This is a very interesting question to me.
Uh-huh. Well, I think we're already in the new paradigm, and I think it's what it's called, you know, awakening and ascension. And I think that life on planet Earth is actually changing dramatically. I mean, if you just even look at the internet, I mean, we've hardly even begun to exploit what the internet can do for us, and yet it's already changed the world. You know, governments can't lie to us anymore, just for example.
Oh, so, Lord have mercy. Yeah. Let's not eat. Oh, man, I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's huge, huge. Yeah. So, you know, the way it's going to change the world on a practical level is really, really huge. And I think in another 20 years, you know, other things. And not so these are technologies I'm talking about, internet, but they change the way that we are in the world, because they open up so much potential. And that is really in the new paradigm. That's really what I think is going to be such a huge change, because we individually are going to be able to see the potentials that are available to us. And they are incredible. And each of us individually has the ability to develop a different, you know, different potentials and be a different kind of person. And in the new paradigm, we're going to accept and embrace these differences and enjoy and share each other's gifts. And we're going to operate from a place of trust. And we're going to cooperate rather than compete. And these are just words that I'm saying, but these are important words. I mean, this is going to be a world where, you know, our currency is love, not money.
Mm-hmm.
That I feel very positive about the future. And I think really the new paradigm is already here. It's just a matter of us getting used to it and stepping into the fullness of the gifts that we were born with, and mm-hmm. stepping into our shining.
Yes. Yeah. And not, I mean, look at the political issues or the social issues, you know, bullying, you know, sexual harassment, all these things are coming to light to be healed.
Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's what I feel. The more we talk about these things, the more they are brought to light to heal. And I think my guides are saying we're living in amazing times. And I thought, you know, a couple of years ago, I'm like, you guys are smoking something on the other side that I need. But they're right, because,
Mm-hmm. And when you look at how ridiculous the whole political system and governmental system has gotten, it's like, you know, it's in its death throes. And, you know, I don't know exactly what will be in place. But mm-hmm. I do know that we will be each of us individually, our own authorities. We will govern ourselves. And no external source will disempower us or be able to control us. And that's going to be an amazing change and a wonderful thing. So,
Exactly. Speaking of sex, lies, and videotape. No, that was a bad movie. Your latest book is called Life, Lies, and Sex. And you've said it's about the nature of reality. What do lies and sex have to do with the nature of reality? Yeah, I like to know. How do you bridge those two? Seriously.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Well, you know, let me tell you first how this book started. I wrote a book about women and orgasm in the mid-90s. And I wrote that book because I feel like orgasm is an incredible experience, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
It starts with the body and it takes us far beyond the body. It's like, what else does that in our lives, mm-hmm. right? And we never talk about it. I mean, I always say there are two things that Western culture is really phobic about, and they are the two things that people think we can't control: sex mm-hmm. and death. Sex and death, yeah.
Wow.
And so anyway, you know, I feel like, you know, I often encourage people in my teaching not to talk too much about things, because we tend to, about what's going on for us, or, you know, not to tell our stories too much. But when it comes to sex, I think we need to start talking. And it'll certainly help to prevent abuse of sex too. It'll certainly help to prevent sexual abuse when we start talking. But we need to talk about the experience of sexual desire. Now, let me go back a little here to how the book started. So when I wrote this book, someone who read it contacted me and said, would I write a book for teenagers about sex? So I said, sure, that seems like a great idea. And I found that I couldn't write it without writing about life, because if you don't understand how to be alive, how to walk through this life with integrity and truth and love, then you won't understand how to participate in any sexual interchange with integrity and love and truth. They're completely intertwined. And then, of course, I looked at, well, why don't we learn this? Well, because we're told all these lies that, you know, we're disempowered as we grow up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's how the book started. And there's actually not a great deal of information in the book, Life, Lies, and Sex. There's not a great deal of information about sex. It's only one chapter about sex. But where I feel people can really begin to understand the values of what sex can teach us is in terms of flows of energy, because life is a flow of energy.
Right. Yep. Yes.
Of energy,
it is.
Actually, everything is energy. And when, and when we can allow it to flow through us freely, we are fully alive. And sex is a great metaphor for how to allow, for looking at how flows of energy arise, for understanding how to play with them and work with them and guide them into whatever arena we want, for understanding energy and feeling flows of energy in our body. And you know, one of the reasons in this culture that there is so much sexual abuse is because people feel energy arising and they only know how to manifest it sexually. I mean, we can manifest it any way we want. It's the ultimate source of creation, which is not just producing children. It's dancing, singing, kite surfing, just driving, just looking, just being. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have a lot to learn from the process of sexual desire and arousal. I think we have a great deal to learn about just life in general, just how to walk through life on a daily basis. And I think in the future, kids will be taught that in school, and they'll very specifically be taught how to channel energy into whatever channels they want to channel it into. You know,
Because you can take sexual energy and any energy that is blissful and euphoric, and where I love to write too, and I get a kick out of writing different things.
Oh, yeah.
Helping people or just, you know, talking like this show, you know, talking about that. It brings me such joy to educate people and to bring different thought forms into reality that it's whatever makes your heart sing. Seriously.
Yes. Yes, what makes your heart sing. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about, like you said, sexual abuse or even, you know, I have clients that, you know, they're raising teenage kids, and the kids, you know, one parent is telling the child, oh, that's bad, or the teenager, the young adult, oh, don't do that. And the more you tell them not to do it, the more curiosity kills the cat, and the more they want
right.
to explore that. So I have a client, actually, that brought this up, and, you know, be honest with the kid. Just
yes,
be honest
be
with the young
honest.
Adult. And
yes.
tell them, you know, be responsible, and... You know, the more you, I'm not saying to have sex, but if they do, put their love in a glove or whatever they're doing, you know, be protected. And
right.
because they're going to do it, the more you say no, the more they're going to want to do it. I mean, at least I did. My mother was like, don't do it. And I'm, hell with it. I lost my virginity and I was on my way at 16. So,
yeah.
Because she told
yeah.
me not to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it is, again, well, especially when you have kids, it is so hard to.
Yeah.
to remember that they've got their own lives to live and mm-hmm. we can do our best to guide them, but they've got to do it the way they've got to do it. People
mm-hmm.
got to do what people got to do. And that includes teenagers.
Yeah. yeah. So, I mean, it's just interesting, you know, I don't know about you, but if you talk to a client or you're helping someone that needs, you know, their reality and you're like, yeah, be honest with the, be honest. Just honesty,
yeah.
I think, is a core value that we all have forgotten.
Yes.
Not to tell the truth or whatever, and it's, I don't know, I just think being open and honest is the best thing. I don't have kids of my
yes.
own, but, I mean.
No,
yeah.
I don't have kids of my own, but I have to agree that, you know, kids are not stupid in any case.
No.
They know when you're lying. And
uh-huh.
my experience is that teenagers really appreciate an adult who will talk to them honestly and straightforwardly.
Yep.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly, exactly, and that's the way I was telling my client. I said, just be open and honest, and, you know, I said, not that you're going to be the cool parent, but you will, but, you know, have respect for women and, you know, whatever you need to do, and so I just think it's interesting that this topic is coming up today, and, you know, there's obviously a great deal of fear around going around on this planet, so how do you teach people to operate from a place of trust instead of fear? Just talking about kids, but I mean, what
yes.
what about other yeah. practicality, you know, and other subjects mm-hmm. in our lives?
You know, I think the most basic thing is to make a space where people can really get in touch with their own personal inner wisdom and their own guidance. And, you know, once you've felt that guidance that is with all of us. I mean, there is nobody who is not supported and guided. And once you've actually felt that, and it is a physical sensation, it's nothing to do with the rational brain at all. It's a physical sensation. And the same thing is true when you're in touch with your inner wisdom or that inner voice that speaks to you, or, you know, it comes through in different ways. But, I think you can't, you know, if we don't have some kind of a grasp on what a small part of reality this physical world around us is, and how vast the unseen reality is, and, you know, how the power of the unseen is always available to us. We have to be open to receiving assistance from it. And that, I think, is the absolute, that's got to be the groundwork for learning to trust, because then you begin to understand that, you know, we're really not in charge here.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I also teach people, you can be in charge. But first, you have to understand that you're not just a human being. You are a being of spirit choosing to be human right now, choosing to manifest in human form. So you need to acknowledge and connect with, align with, communicate with that which you truly are. And people use lots of terms. I mean, some people use the term higher self. I don't particularly like that term because it's sort of it's not higher or lower. It's not any of that. I mean, none of that exists in that reality. And I also don't like the term my soul, because then it kind of like, what is that possessive pronoun doing there? It doesn't quite fit. So, you know, the soul that you are, the vastness. I had an amazing experience once where I met myself in the mirror, and what I saw in the mirror, the word that came to me was vast, vast beyond our wildest imaginings. So when I'm deliberately connecting with that all-knowing, all-powerful part of myself, I think of myself as falling into vastness. But it's different for different people how they experience it. But that's the most basic thing that everyone needs to learn, is how to connect very, very directly. We always are connected with that faster part of ourselves. But how do we let ourselves feel that presence? How do we, I think of it as falling back into the arms of love that are always there to hold me. And I think that can be quite a helpful metaphor. Just fall backwards into those arms of love. They're always there. They're waiting to guide you and hold you.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, I think, I often think that people who come to me for help, they already know everything they need to know. I just might be able to open, there might be something I say that opens a door that they hadn't noticed was already open.
Help them remember. We're helping them remember who they really are. And a lot of times clients will come to me and they'll say, you know what? You just validated me. I already knew that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, cool.
Yes.
That's all you need to know.
Yes.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of I call it my spiritual posse, my spirit guides, angels, and beings of the light. How do you see the angels and other beings of light figuring into these huge changes that are currently happening on our planet?
Well, my teachers have told me, and they tell me often actually, that there are many, many beings from other realms of existence, other planets, parallel realities, whatever you want to call them, who are very interested in what's going on this planet right now, because what we're doing is we're choosing. This is simplistically put, but it probably is the most accurate way of putting it. We were born into darkness, and now we're choosing light. And that is, from our human perspective, we can't possibly understand it, but somehow or other, that helps everything, everyone, when anyone chooses light over darkness. And, we have to experience the darkness in order to choose the light, on this planet at least. And that's one of the reasons why it's such a scary choice to be human. There's so much help available to us. I can't even begin to tell people about it. It's you have to fall back into those arms of love, and you'll begin to feel just the endless love that is being extended to us from all kinds of other beings. All kinds of other beings. I mean, this, not just this universe, the cosmos, whatever. It's absolutely
full of chock-a-block full of thousands, millions probably, different kinds of beings leading different kinds of lives. And some of them aren't interested in us at all, but some of them are very interested and they really want to support us. And we have to ask for their help. I've been told that they're not allowed to help us unless we ask. So we need to get into the practice of asking, you know, ask when you lose your way, ask when you lose your wallet, ask when you're feeling a little afraid, ask when you're alone, ask all the time. And you will begin to feel it. And, you know, I don't see these beings. I feel them. Other people see them and hear them. It's different for everyone, you know.
Yes, it is. It's very different. I mean, I have all the clairies, the clairaudience, clairsentience, and so on. But I do, and it's a gift and a curse.
I mean, I'm actually pretty grateful that I don't have all of those because, oh my God, that's a lot coming at you.
It really is, and you know, let's talk about the ascension process and the awakening again. Mm-hmm. What is your what is symptoms of awakening or ascension for you? What else may we add to the ones that we kind of discussed earlier in the show?
Well, one of the things I found very difficult is that people that I used to get along with, I often now can't tolerate their presence very much. It makes me uneasy. But some of my oldest friends, I don't know how to communicate with them. It feels really strange to be with them. Mm-hmm. Now, my teachers told me something that has helped with this. So I'll repeat this now. It might help other people too. So what they said to me is that I have expanded. So, and that's another word for you know, this process of awakening. You actually expand your personal, we don't have the right words to talk about this. So this is a little misleading, but it might be truest to say that you actually expand your aura.
Okay.
And so what I want to do, because of course I'm not really aware that I have expanded, and other people who meet me are probably not really aware of it either, because we don't think about those kinds of things just right. because we don't think about them. But they feel something different and they feel overwhelmed. Mm. What I want to do is to meet people on the outer edges of my expansion, because that's most exciting to me. Mm-hmm. But again, I'm not really aware of that. And what happens is I expand and people, I think they feel I'm taking up too much space. Mm-hmm. So what my teacher said to me is, be consciously aware, not of you going outwards into the edges of your space to meet others, but allowing your aura to expand to include them. Mm. And I have found that actually really helps. You need to be very gentle about it, but then you need to be gentle about most things in my experience. So, and you know, they may not want to be included, but they may feel a lot of relief to just be included. And to, you know, you have to expect nothing from people, because people, different people are, they're doing different things in this lifetime. So, you know, one of my problems is definitely that I've tended to expect other people to have changed and grown in the same way that I have. And they haven't, you know, they're doing different things with their lives. So, I need to be more, I don't know really quite the right word, but maybe just more accepting of people as to who they are. And I need to get my needs met from perhaps more from the unseen world than from the physical world. Although I do think, you know, there are more and more people like you who are doing the same thing as I'm doing. And that's delightful for me. That's very delightful.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. But, I, you know, when you said about people, and I no longer am associated with certain people in my family of origin.
Yes.
I can't stomach to be around these people.
Right.
And they're in New York. I'm in Florida. I moved 3 years ago because I felt I needed to get the work expanded, and that's where I was being drawn to. And I used to feel bad about that. I used to feel so guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But just because we're not on the same wavelength. And
right.
I want people out there listening to figure out, you know, hey, sometimes we may be brought into a certain family, but sometimes we're just there. It's a pit stop, man. We just got to keep on trucking and keep on moving.
Yes. Well, I've always had problems relating to my family of origin. But I had a really amazing epiphany when my dad died. I mean, when he was alive, I can pretty much say he was a jerk. He was a difficult man.
Mm-hmm.
When he died in 2013, and the moment he died, I could feel his presence around me. I knew that he died, in fact, before I was told, because I could feel his presence so strongly around me. And his body had been failing him for years, and I felt his delight at being free of his body. And he was always a very powerful man. You could feel his presence from rooms away, and, you know, so there was he was still a very powerful presence. And then he was swirling around me, and I thought to myself, oh, he's going to be just the same in death as he was in life. So I said kind of sternly, okay, now you need to leave me be for a while. Mm-hmm. And immediately he was gone. Anyway, the point was that over the next few weeks, he visited with me a number of times. He was always incredibly respectful, totally supportive, and completely unjudgmental, which is exactly the opposite of the way he was in life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so amazing and wonderful to feel his presence. And, you know, I can feel him right now, right there, just laughing and happy and loving and supportive. And so the question came up, you know, how come you can be so, you can change so radically now that you're not in a body? How come you can be so different? And there was only one answer to that question, and that was that I had very specifically chosen. I had chosen him as my father, and I had asked him to be the abusive father so that I would get a fast-track lesson in right use of power.
Oh.
And it was perfect. I mean, it was all perfect. He and I both played our roles perfectly. I learned everything I needed and wanted to learn about right use of power, and it was great. And now, you know, people say to me now, have you been able to forgive your father now that he's dead? And I'm like, I only feel gratitude to him now, you know,
that he
did that for me. He played that role. Well, for others too. But, you know, how amazing is that?
It is. My father passed away too in 2013. And it was like when he passed away, I felt free to do what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he was also somebody that was he will readily admit that he was an a-hole. And he will say that, and he will apologize, but then he's like, well, now I can help you because I understand you better. Okay, because my father would just look at me like with two heads, like, you're my daughter? Mm-hmm. Misunderstood.
Yes.
But now he comes through, he's more loving, he's more caring, you know, he's more supportive, and he goes, well, now I can be more supportive of your path. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And his role, too, was he was a rageaholic, an alcoholic, and he comes through now, and he... you know, he misused the power. I never thought of it that way. He just gave me another aha moment. And how he used his rage to put the fear of God in us.
Oh, yes.
And yes. Now he doesn't do that, obviously. But I forgave him a couple years ago, and it was really interesting how free I was. I have no animosity towards him at all. I never hated him. I just didn't understand what the hell was wrong with him.
Yeah. I really hated my dad. I actually planned to murder him when I was 10 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, he was. I really hated him. But I mean, I just, and now I feel just, I mean, it brings tears to my eyes. I just feel so much love from him. So much love. It's great.
Yeah. And it's like I said, it was amazing. Like, I knew when he passed away that karmically I was done with that side of the family. My mother's still alive, and I have two half-sisters, and I only keep in contact with the older sister on occasion, but the other two, because they're so much alike and so vindictive that I have freed myself. It's kind of like, you're up there, I'm down here doing my path, and sometimes you just have to kind of sever those ties to be happy, and don't feel bad. And society tells us, that's your mother, or that's your father, or that's your sister, or that's, you know, so-and-so. And you're like, yeah, they brought me in and they taught me lessons, but now it's time to do what I need to do.
Yes, and I absolutely would encourage all our listeners to, you know, don't spend time with anyone who brings you down. It doesn't matter who they are. Don't do it.
Right.
It's not good for you. And it's not going to benefit them either, actually. So,
right, you know. Yeah. And I tell people, when a family member is mistreating them, I'm like, would you have a friend treat you that way? No, but they're my blood. No, not really.
No, doesn't make any difference. No.
It doesn't make any difference. So, I mean, that's also, I think, another, process of awakening or ascension, too, that you look at people from a different vantage point. You feel sorry for them, or you feel compassion for them, or you just feel like, I'm sorry that you are that way, but I choose to be on my path in this way.
Yes, and I wish you the very best, and I send you many blessings, and please stay out of my life on this planet right now.
They're like, I actually had two, I call them snakes, try to come into the yard, and I'm like, no, you can stay outside my yard. Thank you very much. You're on the other side of the fence for a reason. And speaking of awakening, do you feel everyone is going to awaken?
You know, no. I think that there are people who come to this planet specifically to experience the dark. And they're not ready to awaken. And we can't change them or help them. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't make someone see the light if they don't want to see the light. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think we have to allow people their own individual paths. I mean, I mean, you cannot change somebody else's path. And it doesn't help anybody if you try. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, I can't quite put into words what I see happening, but you know, it's interesting because even physicists, certainly quantum physicists, will agree that there are countless numbers of parallel realities and possibly countless numbers of this Earth in this planet in different, with you in it playing a different role. So I think that what will happen is the creation of another reality. I mean, given that this is all illusion anyway, although I don't often say that because it's confusing to people to use the word illusion. It doesn't make it any less powerful if it's an illusion, but it is, we do tend to get a little too invested in and take it a little too seriously. So, but I think what will happen is that there will be, somehow or other different Earths, different planets will be created. And one of those planets will be the planet of light that some of us want so much. And the other one will be the planet of darkness, which other people, believe it or not, other people actually do want and need, perhaps, in order
you know, as part of their personal growth. So I don't know.
Yeah, we all, it's called, you know, I don't know. How do you feel about the word of karma?
Well, I disagree with the way it's used, but but I do think we all play out karma. What I actually disagree with is it gives the idea that there's some outside authority that is imposing a punishment on us if we don't do things right. Whereas, in fact, what it is, you know, we, the soul that we are, the vastness that we are the ones who get to decide what we want to experience when we choose to incarnate on planet Earth. And if we have experienced being abused, we will want to experience being the perpetrator. And if we have been the perpetrator, we will want to experience being the one who is abused, being the victim. So it works both ways. And so it's, I don't quite use it, the word karma, in the way that most people do, but it's certainly very relevant. Yeah.
It is. It's called the karmic wheel of justice, the karmic wheel experiencing. When I was taking my courses in metaphysics and, you know, attaining my PhD, thank God, but it was called the karmic wheel. And I went through past lives where I was a serial killer. I was all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yes. Yes. Oh, me too. Oh, I've done unbelievably horrible things. And, you know, I have to say that I'm very glad that I've become aware of those experiences because I've it throws a different light on reality. And I can't point a finger at other people when I know what I've done myself.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, we're running out of time. Wow, this went by fast. Oh my God, we could talk for hours and hours and hours.
Yes, we don't get to talk about this kind of stuff enough.
You know, I know we don't. I know. That's why I have shows like this, so I can educate people on different ideas and expanding their consciousness and everything. So, Mikhaya, where can people find you? And if they want to know more about their path, if they definitely want help, where can they find you?
My website is mikhayaheart.org. And I can be contacted through my website. And, you know, I do sessions. I do workshops in person, mostly in California and Hawaii, but I'm also Arizona. I'm happy to travel, and I do counseling sessions, you know, over the internet, over the phone. And I will say that people often find that after talking to me that I can shift. It's not that I actually change anything on the physical level. I shift perspectives. That's my gift. And so, and sometimes that's all someone needs is just to turn around and see a different view, see things. Yeah. So, but you know, I can help some people and I'm always happy to help when I can. It's always a wonderful thing when I do feel like I've actually helped someone. So,
Exactly.
Well, and my books are available on Amazon and from my website. So,
excellent. Yes. And Mikhaya is spelled M-I-K-A-Y heart, heart.org.
Yes. Mikhaya Heart. Yes.
Mikhaya Heart. Well, thank you for coming on tonight. And, of course, I am Amy Toy. And with Angel Answers at Amy Toy, you can find me at amytoy.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, minds.com, wherever. And have everyone have a great week, and may the angels carry you through.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.